welcome to Funny Business. I'm Rob.
I'm wrong. That's wrong. For sure. You're mostly always wrong.
I don't like to admit that I'm wrong, but I'm Rob.
You're very stubborn.
This is Locke. And today we have an absolute belter of a guest. Ali, the founder of Future Golf. And I'm not letting you say a thing, and it's probably a good thing.
You just wanted to get tips on your own game, didn't you? You're just like, hey, can I get some free lessons? Because you need them. You haven't been hitting them too well. I beat you yesterday. You're not that happy. And yeah.
Anyway, hey, we didn't get into much of the Future Golf stuff. About halfway through the chat, I feel like we talked a lot about like learning, life, entrepreneurship, challenges. Oh, I feel like it was such an inspiring chat. I feel like if you're, this is, again, I know we say it all the time, but these are the type of chats that make you feel me feel like proud that we do funny business, really.
Oh, look at you. I see the little twinkle in your eye. Getting emotional. It's good. Enjoy the episode, though. Seriously, it's a good one.
Ali, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
Right, so I'm Ali Tarai. I'm the CEO and founder of Future Golf. And then I just do a couple of little bits and pieces on the side. So wrote a children's book with my wife, do a podcast with one of my best mates, Vin Jang, who's an absolute juggernaut and dominating in life. And, you know, just like to keep things interesting. And yeah, a bit of variety, follow the curiosity and continuously, I guess, learning and exploring different bits and pieces.
Well, mate, we were doing our prep work for this chat and was saying to you off air, like, it was hard to prep.
Yeah, it's not man of many talents. Looks like you do a lot of things, but what is it about new challenges and stuff that you're drawn to? Like, hey, I want to write a book now. I want to do this. And what's that mindset like?
Yeah, there's probably two parts to it. One is I've got an extreme fear of boredom. And I think that's just existed since I was a kid, where as soon as something gets a little bit mundane or boring, I just need to just activate that part of myself, whether it's trying to learn something new or just give something a crack. And then the other part was probably, I've shared this story a couple of times, but it's probably inspired by my upbringing a little bit too. Like, I just have a really, I guess, big commitment to pursuing dreams and whatever, like, the imagination comes through, I guess, just because... Yeah, growing up, my dad was an alcoholic. He kind of struggled, and I saw him always talking about doing stuff, but never really actually pursuing it. And then just as I got older as well, I think it just became one of those things where I was like, all right, well, even if I do stuff very poorly, which I do a lot of things extremely poorly, I'm still just going to give it a crack. And especially after having kids and little ones, that's one of the things that I really just wanted to show them and be like, hey, you know, it doesn't matter how things play out, give it a shot and see where it lands. And at the very least, you learn something, you'll have an experience, you'll have a story, and then move on.
What was your first experience where you're like, hey, I followed this through and it actually made it happen? It might not have gone 100% to plan, but at least like you've done something, you're like, oh, like following my curiosity, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the big ones was probably in year 12, just finishing high school. So I was always that kid that just really struggled with school. I think I had an attendance rate of about 40% all the way up until year 12. And then it was getting kind of the end of that journey, and the school was always trying to kick me out, being like, all right, it's probably time that you go and pursue a trade or do something like that. And I'm like, well, I'm too small for that, too weak. I'm not really going to survive. Can't really wake up early in the morning. This is going to be a real battle. So it was like, all right, just give me one more chance and I'll try to give school a crack in that final sort of 6 months. And then it was more about trying to hack that and being like, all right, well, I'm pretty far behind here. The last 5 years have essentially been a write-off. What can I actually do to actually get myself to a level where I can complete this thing and potentially have some future opportunities as well? And it was, my strategy was pretty simple. It was, all right, try to learn how to memorize things. So I think I found this thing called Memory Palace, where you'd put things in different rooms. And then I'm like, oh, you can actually memorize the whole subject relatively quickly. And then it was looking at previous past exams that came out. And I'm like, well, the last sort of 6-7 years, these exams have been pretty similar. If I just take a punt on learning these 8 or 9 answers, I should get at least 50 or 60% of these things right. So it was just around doing that. And then, yeah, I was not really expecting much of an enter score or anything, and then went through that process and ended up getting ducks in a couple of subjects and getting into uni at the end of it. So that was probably the first time where I got validation of something that seemed really outside my reach or capability. And it was like, oh, okay, if you actually try to think about things and, you know, that whole notion of working a little bit smarter, seeing how things actually operate at their core, and try to gamify it a little bit, it can work in your favor. And then after that, I just took that mentality onwards in a lot of the other things that I did.
It's like you were saying about the other day, you were saying you're pretty good at exams because you could memorize the questions and you go and dive deep and figure it out so you wouldn't have to work as hard.
So my parents always take the piss. So my sister's a vet. So she super
brainy.
She's
a doctor. She's a doctor.
She calls it. She makes herself calls. She makes the school a doctor. She is a doctor, but it's an animal doctor. So I know it's different, but they say it's harder to get into. But she's extremely. There's
a little bit
smart.
Of sibling rivalry there.
Just, a little bit. Just yeah. I'm a podcaster, and she's a vet. She's a doctor. So it's a hard thing to comprehend. But I always found it at school and sitting exams. Like I went to a private school, so having the ability, we were sort of the rote learning and being force fed to sit exams and stuff. And I found it was a bit the same. I had a bunch of other stuff going on, like sport and things. So applying myself to school, I went on to do uni and different things like that. But I felt like I got really good at not learning shortcuts, but like learning the ability to cram. And it's funny hearing you tell that story about like how you'd get yourself ready or get yourself up for those exams. I'm sure that sort of stuff carried on into university and a bunch of other things that you've done in the future. And for me, like, that I feel like that's like a super skill now of being able to like understand like, or not predict or like think about what might be coming through and like how do I get away with this, you know, like I don't want to sit in a room and study for 3 weeks. Like I'm happy to give it maybe a couple of days before and I know it's coming up, but I'm not giving this 3 weeks. And maybe it's to a detriment. It's probably why I'm not a doctor, you know. I think
but you work in startups and there's always new problems, and I feel like it's a lot of stuff is very foreign, isn't it? Like you're coming across things that you might not have encountered before. So it's like, how do you solve that without a blueprint?
And you don't always have 3 weeks or a month to get ready for something.
And I think what I learned from that sort of experience was that most things in life are actually a game and there's rules and framework set up, right? But then what generally happens is we get taught the mainstream version of those rules. So if you think about school, it's like, oh, well, you got to rock up every day. You have to read every single book. You need to pay attention in class. You have to do all these things. And it's like, yeah, that is one way to get the goal, but there's also alternative methods, right? And I think we see that more and more now. Like it's getting an understanding of what the landscape is in terms of, all right, well, what other tools can I use? You can use tutoring. You can use memorization techniques. You can use speed reading. Like there's all these other little elements and tactics that you can add to your toolkit. And I think when we figure that out, like even in, say, the world of podcasting, similar things exist, right? Like you're either a first mover in an area, you're talking about something that hasn't been done before, or you've got a different type of production ability, you're editing your videos in a different way. Like there's all these different tactics now that people then utilize to try to, I guess, share their message and their content with the broadest audience possible. And I think you see that just everywhere, whether it's startups, entrepreneurship, professional sport. Once you sort of get there and you have the foundations, it's like, well, what else aligns with you that allows you to have the best chance of sort of maximizing your potential and getting the results that you want as you play that game, whatever it is in life.
What about for you personally? What was your first step into the world of business? When did you know that you wanted to sort of go out and do your own things?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because I remember I had an uncle and I didn't really come from a very successful family. Like it was a pretty tough upbringing, but I had one uncle, which was my auntie's husband, and he had a business that he was running out of like Africa and in London and a few other countries. And he was probably a little bit of my hero growing up, where it was the first person that I saw that was, you know, respected, just a nice human being, really kind, doing it the right way, helping out his family. Like he supported so many people within the family. And I think that was probably the first point of inspiration where I'm like, well, business can be a vehicle where you can add a lot of value. And then you can also look after those that you really care about too. And I think that was probably one of the first points of inspiration. And then the other one was just, I was speaking to somebody about this the other day, and it's like business in a way, like, yeah, it's great in a practical sense that you can get an idea out there and you can commercialize it, you can solve problems. But when I was speaking to this person, they were sort of saying that, well, if you actually think about entrepreneurship, it's a little bit like art. And it's nearly a spiritual type of experience as well, where you have to go to the depths of your imagination. You have to test yourself in so many different ways. You have to be resilient. Do all these things. And I'm like, well, as a holistic life experience, that's what really drew me into entrepreneurship. The more and more I started reading about it and reading these stories, like one of the first books that I picked up in this space was The 4-Hour Work Week. And I remember reading that and I'm like, oh, well, here's another, that similar type of thinking to the school story, where it's like, okay, well, you can also try to get something out there into the world relatively in a relatively simple way that doesn't require all that much risk. And then you try to validate it from there. And then so it was pretty much after reading that book where I was like, all right, well, I think in the same week I started a pub crawl company and with one of my mates who actually lives down in the Surf Coast, Jesse, and then started Future Golf, which was called Gen Y Golf, with a few of my mates as well. And it was like, all right, let's just try this, the framework that's outlined in the book, and then we'll adjust from there. And just wanted to build something that we were passionate about. So even if it didn't really work out, it would be a really cool learning experience opposed to, say, doing further education or an MBA, something like that.
I feel like everyone loved Tim Ferriss. You know, like back in the day when you...
Tools of Titans, Tribe of Mentors and stuff, like unreal books, because I feel like easy to digest ideas. And I feel like that lent more, for me personally, like into philosophy and like ways of living and stuff. And I was like just obsessed with like the School of Life, like their books and stuff, and how they like talk about like emotional...
What's his name?
De Bottom.
He was like, do you reckon Tim Ferriss uses virtual assistant to like block out his family? he gives me like solid robot vibes a little bit.
I actually watched a video. Have you seen his latest video talking about learning golf?
No, I haven't actually. I'll have to check it out.
He swings. Really? I know, you don't want to judge, but have a look at the video. It's so funny.
I'll go check that out after. But
what about like, you seem like you read a lot of books and stuff like that. Are you someone to go back to certain frameworks in books and sort of use that with everything that you're doing? Like when you're starting off something new, do you sort of go back and reference those things?
Yeah, it was probably because when I went down the entrepreneurial path, I was like, well, what's one of the controllable actions that I can take that will also be quite enjoyable? And I wasn't really a big reader prior to this journey. And it was, I think I started seriously getting into the entrepreneurial space maybe in 2014. And once I started reading a few, I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to commit to trying to read somewhere between 50 to 100 books every year just to acquire that knowledge base. And I'm like, if I have that, there should be a well-rounded enough amount of information. Like me and Vin always talk about this as well. It's like, when you read a book, it's one of the greatest returns on investment that you can ever get. It's like 10, 15, 20 bucks, and you get 10 years of that person's like most elite level of their experience, all packaged together, structured nicely for you to digest. And I'm like, all right, well, these are gifts that are just being given away pretty much. So why not try to just absorb as much of that as possible? And I just went really wide in terms of, you know, professional development, personal development, philosophy, spirituality, science, like anywhere that curiosity was sort of getting inspired. It was like, all right, let's read about it. And after a while, probably 300-400 books in, you just start getting a really, you know, like things start repeating themselves a little bit, and it's more reading for idea generations rather than actually going for content as such. You know, so I'll nowadays just read, and a lot of the time I won't even be paying attention to what's being, you know, either if I'm listening to it on Audible or even reading it live, but it will just trigger something and be like, oh, okay, there's an idea, let's go jam on that a little.
That was gonna be my next question. For those who are listening, they won't be able to see all the books behind you. Are you someone who likes the physical copies, or do you like it on Audible and listen to it on like...
And do you listen to your own books all the time, read your own books?
Man, I don't know. I've only got a kid's book, so I don't really... It's a pretty quick read. So no,
2x speed. All right, it's done.
And then it's done. It's just nice and quick. But I like all of it, you know, depending on what mood I'm in. And a lot of the times I'll have the Kindle version, I'll have the physical copy, I'll have the Audible version. And sometimes it'll be all three of them, because I think there's a real beauty in holding a book in your hand. And sometimes, you know, especially if it's more like fictional or it's got graphics in it, you know, autobiographies where you've got the pictures and stuff, I'm generally going those and with the physical copy. I love Kindle just for highlighting and then taking notes and getting a little bit deeper. So say prepping for a pod where we're reviewing books, or generally use the Kindle. And then Audible's great just to get a feel for a book. A lot of the times that will be the way that I'll filter whether I'm really going to get deeply engaged with a book, because I think listening to it's probably the easiest form, and you can do it while you're driving, walking around, playing around to golf. So it's probably the way that I can digest as much info now as possible.
I love that. I feel like with the pod, we're lucky enough to speak with so many amazing people. Yeah. I feel so grateful, but it's like it's this filter around like you reading the books, and it's like we've done this for 4 years now, asking all these insane questions. Like, whether it's conscious or not, I feel like it's like seeping into me. Like whether it's where you fully absorb it, but it's like we have so many conversations about things that we're interested in. I feel like it generally gives you like a well-rounded view on things.
We feel they're lucky, and it's almost like, I'm sure you've had the same sort of feelings with having a pod and being able to chat to different people and having like the ability to be like mentored by people or mentored by osmosis, you know, like these ideas, just you get to have these conversations, which for me, like I had a bit the same sort of thing. Like I would be reading or listening in my case to so many different books, and I'd be like, I need to listen to all this shit. I need to cram it in. And then like, I feel like I've maybe reduced the amount of content I absorb now, especially because we were having sort of two guest episodes a week for a while. And I was like, I'm sort of, it comes to a point where
info obesity or whatever it is.
I'm sure you can get your idea of like sometimes we like analysis paralysis. You get a lot of people who maybe like get stuck in that I need to learn versus I need to execute and do. Like, have you seen that with people that you come across who ask you questions around the world of startups or getting things off the ground?
Yeah, for sure. And even personally, you know, you get to a point where you get so much information, but you just don't have enough time or resources to do anything with it. And you start realizing, well, it's all great spending 3-4 hours reading this book or speaking to this person, but if I'm not going to action or do anything with this information, and I probably started leaning towards that a little bit more, where it was more, all right, if I've got a specific problem or I've got a dream or a vision that I want to try to execute, what's the actual information and the knowledge gap that I've got right now that I need filled, and making it more practically applicable. And I think one of the best tools for that, once you get to a point where you've got the baseline foundations, and I think there's maybe two levels to that, where it might be, if you're going down this path, where your first 50 books or your 100 books give you just a nice sort of foundational understanding, because in my opinion, they actually allow to ask better questions too, because you're not just asking level one, level two questions to somebody if you meet them, right? And I remember one of my mentors saying this. It's like, well, sometimes you actually, if you're looking for advisors and you're looking for mentors, don't go for like Barack Obama or, you know, the Tim Ferrisses or the Brené Browns, when you're just going to ask them a super basic question that you can get in their book or from watching a YouTube video. Like, make sure that you're asking the right people the right questions at the right time. And one of the best bits of advice I got there is, if you're looking for advice, like, get somebody to actually walk the path that you're about to walk and embark on yourself, you know, and nearly maybe just a year in advance or 2 years in advance, because their information and advice is probably going to be a little bit more practically applicable rather than, what you're going to get from the best in the world.
Yeah, we spoke to Will Anderson, and he was talking about that with up-and-coming comedians. He's like, I get a lot of messages from people like, how do I be better in that? And they haven't done their first gig. And he's like, come to me when you've done stuff, and then you can ask me questions around like the actual intricacies of it. Yeah. And it's like, that's where I can genuinely help you, rather than just the basic stuff that you can Google, you know, like come. And we find that too. If people come to us advice about pods and that,
how do you start a pod?
When they've started it. Yeah. 100%. It's better when they've started, they've done stuff.
Do something. It's hard advice. And sometimes not everyone wants to hear like, do something first. You know what I mean? Just do it. You know, everyone says, but why or how? I want to do these. Like, they want this like massive plan before you do things. But I think some of our learning, especially from being in the world of startups and the startup space, is like I mentioned before, you don't always have that time. You have to move fast. You have to be able to make decisions, make calls, and not everything's going to work. Like, I know we were saying that stuff off air, like not everyone, those lucky people that have that smooth sailing journey where they've never had a hiccup or a speed bump in their life. But most of the time, even if you make a call, sometimes it might be wrong and shit will go pear-shaped, and you have to just deal with it. And that, like you mentioned before, that's sort of, I think that's the cool thing for us about doing entrepreneurship or running our own things. It's that lived experience of not living and dying by your own sword, but like having a crack.
Yeah, for sure. And I just don't think that there's any shortage of information. And people probably get nearly a little bit disappointed nowadays if, say, they come to you guys and like, hey, how do I start a pod? Because they just want a magic recipe, right? Or the special sauce. And the reality is, in most things that are successful or great, there just isn't a magic source. There isn't a four-step program where if you just do bang, 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 you're going to get the exact same result. Like, there's so many different factors at play there. And I think, we're so fortunate that we are living in a world now where, if you want to know how to do something, the foundations of that method is available anywhere, and it's generally available for free, right? Like, it's not like there's this secret society out there where everyone's like got this lockbox of the best moves and they're just not sharing them. Like, that just isn't the reality of it. It's more just like, hey, are you willing to roll your sleeves up for 5 to 10 years and then give it an absolute full-on crack, get lucky with amazing people, time your run at the exact right time? Like, there's so many other elements that are then also involved with that. Like I'm sure you're seeing it in the podcasting world, right? Like it's getting saturated out there. And if you're a, like, if you're somebody new trying to get into that space, you're going to have to differentiate yourself so much more than what Joe Rogan was doing 10 years ago or 15 years ago when he started. It's just, it's not the same game anymore.
And I love it. I think it's all a lot about timing too, isn't it? It's like at that time, what can you do? Not just be like a third, fourth wave mover, like first wave, second wave. Yeah, I get that. But like the third, fourth wave, it's like, what else is there? I feel like I heard a quote about like, you've already heard the right advice. It's just when you're ready to hear it. Like it's all out there. It's just like, when are you actually absorbing the info to make that happen? For you know,
there are a lot of pods out there at the moment though, isn't it?
Yeah. But like I like the ones who are truly unique and different, and they're just themselves. It's almost like going into something naively thinking, oh yeah, it can almost like set you on a path of like authenticity, I feel like and getting you into it. Because if you knew how hard everything was, it'd be hard to say yes to do stuff straight away, you know? I don't know.
Longevity, you know, it's like, I think like back to sports, like I think good now is a different benchmark or a different thing. Like a lot of people can come, be a flash in the pan and be like, all right, cool. They've got a pod, they do 4 episodes, 5 episodes, or they do one season and it's gone. For us, at least, we feel like we've got been able to get past that
consistency,
hump.
Consistency, yeah.
We've done it for four years. We'll have our 1,000th episode this year. We've done.
That's awesome.
Have we?
Mm.
There you go.
Whatever. He doesn't do the editing, as you can tell, Ali.
I've edited over 1,000 of these, mate. It's I know how many we've done.
Fucking knows. What about like? Are you someone who works a lot on your strengths or your weaknesses?
I like alignment. So that's one of my real big words that drive a lot of the things that I do. So it can be a combination of strengths and weaknesses, but it's more around like, what am I interested in? What am I aligned in with at the moment? So say for example, right now, like, I really want to get my energy, you know, like body, mind, spirit, all of that sort of in alignment. So I probably realize that body's one that I've been neglecting, like realistically, like the others are pretty well nourished. But yeah, so I was mentioning just prior to us jumping on air, just started doing like body fit training and, you know, doing a few of those a week and just getting into that. So that's really outside of my comfort zone, but I can feel the benefits of it. So now that might be something that is actually a weakness, but hopefully it'll end up becoming a strength as well. So I think it's a balance. Like if I've got a weakness there that's actually holding me back from, who I ultimately want to be, then I will go and address that weakness. But I'm a really big fan of leveraging your strengths. Like I think, you know, we all have, I just have a belief that most of us have like not natural talents or gifts, but just things that we're sort of interested in, right? There's a great question. It's what do you find easy that other people find hard, right? And I think most people have that within them. There's going to be something that you're better at than I am, than, you know, they're, your mum's better at something that she finds really easy, but you find really difficult. You know, you're going to have these things that exist. And if we can align more and more with those skills, I think that's where we generate the most value that we can provide to, you know, ourselves and others.
I think like that with golf too. You know what I mean? Yes. Like I'm hitting them all right off the tee at the moment. So it's like, do I keep practicing or do I work on my irons and putting? What do I do? Do I become really, really good at this and suck at everything?
I think, Ali, that's one of those things. Like if he just focused on his weaknesses, there'd be too much, not enough time in the day.
Yeah, that's right. Hey,
can we rewind back a little bit and talk about future golf? We'd love to get into maybe some of the origins, some of the, I feel like it's seen it everywhere. It must be so cool to be able to, like so many people have gravitated towards what it is that you're doing and bringing, I know we said it off air too, but it's like a new wave of like a youthful energy into such a sport with such like
traditional
history and tradition and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the core of the inspiration behind the idea. Like I grew up, you know, I got into golf because of the Tiger Woods video games back in the early 2000s. And I'm like, all right, this looks like a pretty cool sport. Tiger Woods was obviously on his rise and becoming an absolute juggernaut, and that sort of drew some attention to golf in that period. But the gates were still firmly closed to the game, like in any real practical level. You know, back then it was all about traditional clubs, really expensive, you know, elitism and joining fees. And it was, but then the golf industry at the same time was also on a little bit of a decline, funnily enough, even though there was all this attention coming towards it. Like golf clubs were closing down and the average age of a golfer was increasing. It was sort of creeping up to like 64, 65 years old. It was primarily just males playing. You know, there wasn't really much diversity in the sport. And just as I was kind of getting into the game myself, I was like, all right, well, you know, at its core, it's simply just hitting a ball with a stick, you know, out in really nice parcels of ground. And then it was, all right, well, I got really hooked on it. I got the bug, and you know what it's like when you get addicted to it and it just completely takes a hold of you. And then I was able to get sort of 8, 9 of my best mates into the sport as well that had never really played it. And then I'm like, oh, okay, well, we're in our sort of late 20s. And we went from never really engaging with this sport to now we're completely hooked. We want to quit our jobs and we just want to play golf all the time. If this happened to us and it happened so quickly, surely there's going to be other people out there that, you know, are being kind of like hidden away from this and they're not really being exposed to such a amazing sport. And that was kind of the hypothesis was, all right, how do we get younger people into the game? And 10 years ago, the idea of even under 40-year-old guys playing golf was absurd. You know, like I remember pitching the idea to people and talking to them and like, oh, that will never fly. You know, golf's an old person sport. You do it when you retire, takes too much time. No one's going to do it. I'm like, yeah, but we're kind of doing it and we're figuring it out and we're playing in daylight savings and we're going out every Sunday morning. And that was kind of the concept. And I actually found the initial note of the idea the other day and I shared it with the team. And it was just super simple. It was like, all right, try to get a handicap. Let's track our scoring. So there's a bit of competition there. We'll play a variety of different courses because we didn't want to just play the one course all the time. And we'll see if we can get some partner courses on board and host some events. And funnily enough, that concept, like when I was looking at it, I'm like, all the core ingredients, it's nearly exactly the same. We've just expanded on it, tried to amplify it a little bit more. But the whole idea, fundamentally, the problem that we're trying to solve was how do you make golf more accessible? You know, more enjoyable, and then build a different type of community of non-traditional golfers that didn't really exist prior to that. And
so, man, yeah, from an outside perspective looking in, that feels like one of the things for us is like so simple, you know, like the simplified version of like, you know, you wrote that down. And it's so cool that you found that note and talk about what it is. But from us, like,
hard.
To execute things to a level that you have and keep it simple. And it's like, we see it, and the reason it stands out so much for us is like, it's like that appeal of, they are the things that people want when they get into golf. You go do things where it's like, I've got my brother-in-law, massive.
He loved getting a mention in this.
He loves golf. He was lucky enough out of school. He went over to the States on a golf scholarship and like can play for last year. He was doing around the Geelong area. He was doing like school clinics and coaching for primary school kids for golf and that. So it's like, I understand the draw card of.
We might have to get his details from you if he's still. We always let a great pay when they come get involved with events and helping members get into it. So,
but it's like one of those ones where it's like you see, like they like some people like want to be a member of like one club, and I understand the prestige of like you want to play at one thing. And it's a sense of belonging, there's like other things that attach to being a member, like of any club or anything. Like the same reason people join fucking boats clubs or bowls clubs or sporting clubs, like
connection,
you know, all that sort of stuff. But for people who want to be able to get out there and do different things and experience, have different experiences at different locations with their mates. Now, I feel like
themselves,
what you've done is just like, just hit the nail on the head of what people actually want to do. Cause it's not, and the fact that you have the flexibility to scale up and scale down of people who can play all the time, people who are just getting into it. It's really cool. I'm sure you've had a bunch of feedback from people who've been our future golf members who have helped inspire, I guess, the next set of features or product set that have come out through Future Golf.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And like, and the other cool part is that bringing a younger demographic into the sport, it's actually fostering the next generation of leaders within the sport too. So we've had plenty of our members that are now sitting on boards. They're like club captains. They're working, you know, at Golf Australia. They're doing all these other bits and pieces. And they went like 8 years ago, 9 years ago, they'd never really picked up a golf club before. Right. So they're bringing in this and they're also then being an impetus for change, I guess, within the sport. And I think we're now seeing that happen collectively, right? Like golf ultimately is having a pop culture moment right now. Like you're seeing every athlete, every celebrity has got a golf club in their hand. Like the brands are getting like super cool now. Like there's just so many, like, you know, it's not what it was 10 years ago where you had some colorful polos tucked into your pants and that was it, right? Like you're seeing like golf fashion becoming pretty, like it's becoming a lifestyle essentially. And it's probably nearly becoming like a modern day flex, right? Like people don't share their watches or their cars anymore. They share themselves being out in a golf course on a Tuesday morning if they've got that luxury nearly as a symbol. And I think we're seeing that like across the board. And I think it's awesome to see that something that's so good for you has now actually having a pretty cool moment as well. So it's like this beautiful wheel of like people are out there connecting with their mates, getting healthy, feeling good. You know, the a very traditional industry is also changing rapidly as well. And
it's a healthy it's addiction. Awesome. You know what I mean? Like being outside in nature, 4 hours of getting your steps up, getting the K's in, like
duffing all your 8 irons.
Right. Besides the pissing off when you had a bad game and you haven't.
Yeah. He lost his mind the other night. I beat him actually. So he just turned it up. Yeah. He's down in the dumps a bit. Yeah.
Like that element, like it can't be underlooked. You know, like
a connection piece with our friends. That's literally saved our friendship group, I reckon. Like we got friends who live in other states now, and it's just like, that's rekindled the group chat, the banter, you know?
Yeah, and it's awesome. And even meeting new friends, right? Yeah. Like when you finish uni or you finish high school, for a lot of people, outside of work, especially as you head into your 30s, there's not really all that many ways to build like your friendship group up, especially when you're going through different chapters of life. Whereas, yeah, we always say a round of golf is the equivalent of 8 coffee meetings, realistically. Like you're going to be out there, you're going to get a pretty good idea if you're gelling with somebody and clicking with them. And, you know, you organize that follow-up round. That's 8 hours you spend with somebody in 2 weeks. Like, you can turn that into a pretty good mate relatively quick if there's alignment there. And we've had so many stories of our members that they've met just randomly playing around a golf. And then, you know, like I think some have ended up, you know, sharing a house together. They've started businesses together. They've gotten jobs. They've gone on golf trips. They've gone on all these adventures just because of randomly getting grouped together.
That's what happened to Sam too. He got grouped with Kelly Slater, didn't he? He got
moved back through. Beach. Not a bad group.
He goes, "Oh, do you just want to play with us?" He didn't even know who he was, did he?
Yeah, down here, like my old man loves Kelly Slater. Like,
yeah,
just as you do if you like, you're into surfing.
Yeah, he's in his bedroom. Your mum's a bit.
Yeah, Sam doesn't know. Sam, my brother-in-law, he didn't really care that much for surfing at the time, and this is maybe like back like a decade ago, and they're playing at 13th Beach and they played up onto him and they end up playing 18 or 17 holes with Kelly Slater. And he still brings the story up, pisses me off because it's like, didn't even care. You know, some people.
But like you spend so much time, if you're in a golf bag, you're walking around, you can see if people get frustrated easy, how they handle pressure. Do they like the banter or they don't?
Do I want to be friends with this person? maybe not. But I'm sure you've had a bunch of cool experiences too from the doors that have opened for yourself in this this industry now, being like a pioneer of this new movement coming through.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's been like, that's probably been the best bit, to be honest, is just the people. Like, I think about, you know, say, for example, you guys probably know Dill Buckley, who's got a great pod. Like, me and Dill met through golf, and that's probably one of those new relationships where he's just become a really good mate of mine. And we ended up pretty much having a coffee. And then 2 weeks later, we went to the British Open in Scotland. Dill ended up getting a media pass, was interviewing Cam Smith, and was on global news channels all over the world because of questions that he was asking. Like, it was just one of those things that started pretty much from a round of golf and a coffee meeting into just an extreme set of experiences and a really good relationship. Like, I remember played a pro-am, it was last year or the year before, and Glenn Maxwell, the cricketer, went to my high school. So then we rocked up. Maxie was one of our first members when we first started, so he's been a part of it. And then we get to the first tee and he's like, "Oh yeah, Rick's caddying today." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, it must be one of his mates." And then you get on the first tee and Ricky Ponting's like caddying for one of the other players. And it was just one of those mind-blowing experiences where it's like a Wednesday afternoon, you're at Moona Links and there's Glenn Maxwell and Ricky Ponting and a couple of pro golfers, and you're a hacker and you're just hitting it around and sitting there speaking to Jeremy, one of the guys that works with us. And I'm like, "This is weird, man. Like, what are we doing?" Like, Ricky Ponting's like holding the flag and reading putts, like while we're out having a hit. And just you get to spend 4 or 5 hours with for me, it was a guy that I had his posters all over my wall, like had all these things, and I'm like, wow, like just all these just crazy experiences. But
I think it's like doing other things too, not like just cricket. You know, like that. Yeah. I'm sure they'd just be over talking about cricket if that's what they do all the time. Nah. It's like, no. They're passionate to talk about their other interests, you know?
Absolutely.
Like,
Did Glenn Maxwell have the video the other day where he hit the putter with the putter?
I saw that. I don't know where it was the other day, but that's a good video. Have you seen that one?
His hand-eye coordination is ridiculous. Like, that man is just genuinely one of the most naturally gifted, freakish athletes that's ever been born. Like, he can do anything. he can hit a driver left-handed and right-handed over 300 meters.
No way. That's crazy.
What about your game?
He did a cricket ball about 300 meters. My game, I'm what you'd call a very unnatural and unconventional golfer, but I make it work. as best as I can. So if you looked at my golf swing, you'd be like, all right, there's a 35 handicapper, and then I'll just keep squirting them around there and end up with every now and again a decent score. So I play off, I think, 7 at the moment, but it's not a pretty 7. Yeah, some people are like, oh yeah, he plays off 7, but he could go pro. It's like, no, mine's like, oh, he's probably naturally a 20 handicapper, but he's figured out just how to work it around the greens a little bit.
Play your game.
So yeah, mate. That's what's beautiful about golf, though, right? And it's one of the great things about it is you never see two of the same golf swings. Like, no one ever plays the same round of golf, and people probably judge themselves too harshly in golf, and they get really down on themselves. But here's the other reality: no one really cares what you're doing. Yeah, they're too worried about their own game. Like, I remember we'd play events and people were like, I'm so nervous and like, I really don't know. Like, you know, I haven't been hitting it that well. And I'm like, mate, no one's going to care. Like, it's just the reality of it. They'll be too focused on their own stuff. You just enjoy yourself.
I feel like that too. Like, if someone's coming up on you and you're about to tee off and then you got the full thing, it's like, yes, people might watch you, but I feel like you think like you're playing at the MCG and 90,000 people watching. It's like, they don't give a fuck. Like, honestly, you're at Queen's Park on a Wednesday. No one, they don't care.
You're not that important, mate.
Yeah. And if you duff it, they'll probably,
they're still laughing. But maybe it's probably a good segue to a question we ask all our guests, is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
Yeah. Like, I love, you know, it's pretty cliche now, but I love meditating. Journaling, they're probably the two that I'd go to pretty heavily. Golf's obviously a great one. You know, like, you get a mixture of everything in a way where you can just sort of turn off, get out there. And then I think just connecting with a good mate or just somebody that's going to light you up and give you that little boost. So probably got a few there in the toolkit that try to lean on whenever needed, but yeah.
I like that too. And you got two kids, you're juggling, doing dad life and running your own thing. Mentioned off air, my daughter's 2 at the moment. I've found that, like, the challenge of running something and the time that I used to have in my life to do different things is dissipated. How do you go juggling dad life? And I know you've written a kid's book and done a bunch of different things with helping the same flavor of next gen of people coming through. I feel like that's a big flavor to after chatting to you today of the stuff that you're interested in and must get energy from.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I used to be pretty unstructured and relatively undisciplined. And I think this journey really made me realize, all right, well, you got to have some sort of foundational framework if you're going to play the game, you know, without losing your mind completely over the next little bit. So probably about 6-7 years ago, we've actually turned it into a program now. It's called Recalibrate, where it's nearly the way that Vin, who I do the Vin and Ali Show podcast with, Vin Jang, is awesome to check out if you haven't already seen him on your socials, but he's just amazing at communication and a few other bits and pieces. But we've pretty much shared our operating system of how we approach life, like, and we really just align it to our values, but then use a lot of the best aspects of nearly business planning and strategy to manage our entire lives, right? So I'll use things like Asana and my calendar, pretty religiously in that sense, where, you know, every week I'll plan out what the week ahead looks like. I'll have it aligned to sort of the key, you know, just a few key things that I want to progress or get moving forward, and then try to leave a bit of space there as well, you know, just for spontaneity and connection and a little bit of fun as well.
I love that. I think planning is underrated. Like, you're a big planner. Yeah. Like, you love using Asana and all those different programs to sort of create like a checklist of things. And I feel like once you achieve things throughout the day, like, you feel good, even if they're not, couldn't be the biggest things. It might be a small list.
I think it comes back to what you said at the start of the episode, even about how you learned at school about what to learn and what's important. I feel like when you get to use like an operating system or a process where you are intentionally planning and cutting out the shit that's not important, I think that even when people do that sort of thing and you ask them, even it doesn't matter where they work, whether they're working startups or corporates or whatever, and you go, just what work are you doing on a day-to-day basis? Yeah. Actually just write it down. And where are you spending your time? Where are you allocating? What's giving you headaches? Like, what is actually important? Is that necessary? Should you be doing that? Why are you doing this thing last when it's probably giving you the most value? Like, just getting it out in paper and actually having to like look at it and go, fuck, I should be spending more time here. I should be investing.
Some people don't want to face the truth though, do they?
It's easy. Sometimes it's easier to hide. It's easier, you know, like, it's
hard to face the truth and go, well, this is actually what's happening right now.
But if you are dedicated to improving, or if you're running a business and doing what you're doing, like, I'm sure like you want to give it the best chance to, like, you've made such cool inroads in what it is now. Like, I'm sure that you're thinking, like, fuck, where could this go in 5 years' time? Like, how can I actually get it there? Like, you have to be accountable to yourself.
But for sure. And I think that's the word there. It's accountability, right? Like, if you've got things written on a list and you, even if you just make that simple commitment to yourself that I'm going to aim to progress or put a dent into these things, you can see what the reality is at the end of every week. It's like, okay, well, I plan to do this much. I got this much done. Next week, will I get my planning and my actuals somewhere in a better zone? And we never get everything finished on that list, but I think there is that level of accountability. And yeah, and even if you think about just resources, right? Like, fundamentally, we speak about this in Recalibrate. Like, we've got three core resources. It's time, money, and energy at the end of the day. And time and energy are probably the most finite. In essence, like, money, you can, with, you know, luck, skill, whatever, you can probably change that one a little bit. Time, it's 24 hours, no matter who you are, 7 days, that's what we get. And then energy, depending on where you're at, there's probably a little bit of variance there, but most will have a level of energy there. And there's things that are going to deplete our energy and there's things that are going to really enhance it. Right. And I think if we figure out time and energy, it probably relates to the third one, which is money in the end anyway, because if you're doing more things and you're being a little bit more effective with your time and how you allocate your energy, and if it's nourishing energy and positive energy or creative energy rather than dull, you know, nothing really happening in it, I think that nearly becomes part of the game.
What about, like, the relationship with yourself, like positive self-talk? Are you hard on yourself? Are you, how do you see things like that? Like, if things come up and say you don't tick that off, are you someone to really, like, I should have done that, or blah, 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 or are you forgiving yourself?
I'm pretty optimistic, right? Like, say, like, my wife will tell me all the time, she's like, you're going to have the worst thing happen to you and you'll have some silver lining on it, right? Like, what was it there? And I've just always been like that. I think just because I grew up and so much bad shit happened all throughout that journey, it's like, all right, well, hey, that's a lemon. How do we turn it into lemonade? And that's just always been my mentality. And I just view life that, it's a very fine line between what's good and bad, right? And a lot of the times the things that we think are bad in that moment, they're actually not. It's just right then it can be. And if you buy too much into that emotionally, or you know, you're too hard on yourself, it doesn't really help you. And I'm probably just big on that. I'm like, well, is my behavior or the way that I'm processing this right now, is that actually helping me and those around me? Or is it going to make me better? Or is it bringing enjoyment to other people? And if not, or myself, there's potentially a different approach to this. And I think that's where journaling's been really helpful over the last 10 years or whatever, where it's like, all right, well, I was feeling this. And I've heard a few people say this, like, a lot of people over-index on their emotions, right? They'll get an emotion and they'll think, all right, I need to act on this straight away. Where a lot of the time it's like, yeah, great, that's an emotion and you probably do need to process it, but you might not have to actually just act on every single emotion that comes through your body.
And restraint is a skill.
Yeah, and you can go too hard. Like, you don't have to. You just let time settle for a bit sometimes. Yeah. You know, I feel like,
let it pass.
Like, I'm a pretty instinctive, like, emotional, like, bang bang person.
It's like you know, like in Zoolander, where it's like inside the computer and they start banging on the computer. I feel like that's locked. Especially with technology, gets like, it's one of the few things he gets really angry about. He's like, he goes full caveman.
That's all right. But, like, stay away from it.
Like, resilience, I think that's a good way to put it. Like, the pick yourself up and go again. I feel like nothing really ever goes 100% according to plan. So it's like, how do you build that up? Like you were saying, like, turning that lemon into a lemonade. Yeah, you know, like, the resilience, sure. I feel like most people, like, everything, life's hard. You know what I mean? It's like, whatever your version of hard is, it's just like, how do you keep going and finding the motivation to keep going again, you know?
I'm probably going to butcher this, but I was reading, I can't remember which book it was, or it was maybe a video the other day, and they were talking about, like, the guy's breaking down just the universe, right? And he's like, we all sit there, and he's like, you know, it all started 14 billion years ago, and it's just a combination of hydrogen and atoms and everything that we see, right? Like, whether it's this microphone and all that, everything's like 14 billion years old, and it all comes from different stars and galaxies far, far away. And then he sort of finishes it off, and he's like, and then we sit there as a human being and we think that we're going to control something, you know, and we're really going to impact it. And we take things so seriously and, like, you know, all these things happen. It was just a nice perspective shift when you actually break it down, like, this little blink that we're here for, right? and we get this awesome experience, and we sit there and we judge all these moments and who we are like so heavily, when the reality is it's like, it's not a joke, but it's close to it, you know, in a way. Like it's as serious as it is hilarious. Yeah, like our lives, like, and
if you don't take an optimistic approach when you figure out how insignificant you are, it's like life can be pretty hard when you watch too many of those videos going down the vortex.
That's right. You can get in the right. Sometimes it, yeah,
you know, like I feel like that's for me anyway. Like getting through stuff, like laughing at things, and people can take themselves just as I do sometimes. It's like bring yourself back to why, just relax.
Go play golf. Go play golf. Well, mate, it's still early in 2024. What are you excited about for the rest of the year?
This year, I think for me this year, a lot of it's just around simplicity in a lot of ways, like just enjoying life. We're just progressing. If you think, like, future golf is probably going to be a pretty big one in terms of just allowing that to continue to grow and potentially looking at different types of expansion, you know, whether that's both in Australia and then also overseas. So that's something that we're exploring a little bit at the moment. But yeah, man, like the more and more as I get down this journey now, it's just really about enjoying it as much as possible and spending time with people that I want to spend time with, you know, spending time with the kids, watching them grow and develop. And yeah, like I think the tagline would be just doing things that you love with people that you love.
Well, mate, thank you for spending some time with us today. Really enjoyed this chat and excited to get it out in the world.
No, awesome. Thanks, boys. It was great connecting.
You're bragging about golf in the intro. You said a couple of things. You're chirping for a while there, and I've had to hold my tongue because you're someone who doesn't really like smack talk. You know, I've been very nice to you in any sort of competitive essence because as soon as I try and say something, it gets under your skin. You'd be like an ice cube, mate. You just melt.
Look at you, very defensive at the moment. You're only as good as your last game, and the last game I beat you by 3. So you spent about 7 shots in the sand, and you're very frustrated. I know we say we love golf and that, but the last time you played, you didn't love golf, did you?
I didn't love golf, but
there's no shame in losing to me, though. You know, it's all right. You were like, do I need to go to counselling? Do I need to check myself in?
There is shame, mate. You know what I mean? Anyway, hey, I hope you enjoyed this chat. And if you're new to Funny Business, we release guest episodes every week. And if you like this episode or you're into something, we've had a bunch of guest episodes over the last 4 years. So there's something for everyone. Dig back in, whether you like athletes, musician, tech, startups, world of business. Go back, dig into them because there's 300 and something plus. So enjoy.